What is going on, Pirate Nation? Welcome into the Sports Objective. We appreciate everyone who's tuned in now live, be it on Facebook Live, YouTube, or Twitter, or of course, if you're watching archived on any of those platforms or listening to the audio only or podcast form, pretty much anywhere podcasts are found, including but not limited to Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and Spotify. We're just over 2.5 weeks until opening day for the 2022 college baseball season. East Carolina will be taking on Bryant at Clark LeClair Stadium, 3-game series to open the season. But right now, throughout the coming weeks, we're going to be taking a trip down memory lane, talking to Pirate baseball players from a variety of eras. And right now, very excited to be joined by a right-handed pitcher for the Pirates from 1988 to 1991, John White. John, we appreciate your time this afternoon.
Hey, Bubba, appreciate you having me on. It's an honor to be on here supporting the ECU Pirates and looking forward to a great year coming up. So thank you for having me on.
Yeah, no doubt. Always love talking Pirate baseball. This is a program that I've really followed since the late 80s, right around 1990, during your years. So that 1990 team is really the first great memories I have of Pirate baseball. I went to a few games that season. The Pirates went 47-9, and I know we'll talk more about that season, in the coming minutes. But before we do that, tell us about your path to East Carolina. You're a North Carolina kid. You were from the greater Charlotte area, Gaston County. Just tell us about your background, the sports you played growing up, and then, your path throughout high school baseball and recruitment to ECU.
Sure. So I played all the three big sports, baseball, basketball, football, growing up. Spent most of my youth in Gaston County area, knew a lot of the players growing up that I played with in high school, but I did spend about 2.5-3 years in Panama, Republic of Panama. My father was in the Army, so we got stationed down there. So my first foray into high school baseball actually was in 9th grade. I was in Corundu Junior High, but I played for Balboa High School in Panama in the Panama Canal Zone, and that was my first taste of high school baseball. So my dad sent me back to the States to start my high school career back in Gaston County, lived in the same home in Stanley, North Carolina, and started up at East Gaston High School, played JV football in the fall, and then basketball, started off on JV, ended up in varsity before the season was out, and then quickly spring was upon us, and my favorite sport came up, and that was baseball. And that's where I started. I played under Coach Van Dyke, played high school baseball with him as a coach. And he also coached the American Legion team. He's in the American Legion, North Carolina American Legion Hall of Fame. Coach Van Dyke was my coach. Started off a little slow. I didn't get to play the field my sophomore year. I did pitch. As a sophomore, I pitched a no-hitter against Kings Mountain High School. Striking out 17. So that kind of led me to believe I might have had a career in baseball versus the other sports. So the next season coming up, I let football go concentrated on basketball and baseball. And as that progressed, I started getting noticed for basketball a little bit and then ultimately baseball the most. And we pitched in the 4A conference, the featured teams like West Charlotte, West Mecklenburg, North Mecklenburg, et cetera, and started getting noticed. NC State at the time started coming to see me my junior year, late my junior year. And I had really been kind of groomed to go to UNCW. I'd went to their baseball camps for many years, and Coach Scaff and I and Coach Guthrie and I had a close relationship. And so it looked like I was going to go to UNC Wilmington. And in my senior year, towards the end of the year, we were in the playoffs for the 4A playoffs on our side. And Coach Billy Best was watching a couple guys from Independence, which were in the playoffs on the other 4A Charlotte area on the South Charlotte side. And he was watching some of those studs over there at Independence pitch, and he caught wind that I'd pitched the night before against West Mecklenburg, and I'd struck out 18 of the 21 batters, gave up one hit. So that kind of piqued his interest a little bit. And he came and saw my first high school playoff game that year. And we actually got knocked out by Davie County. The guy pitched a no-hitter against us. I pitched a one-hitter on our side, struck out 14. So things, you know, started picking up from there. I started hearing a little bit more rumors about teams that are wanting to look at me. University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, wanted to offer a partial scholarship. Montreat Anderson was a school that Paul Tunnell, who was a Cleveland Indian scout, who was really high on me, wanted me to come there. And then obviously UNC Wilmington was my first choice at the time. So American Legion ball started up, and Coach Best came over and watched a couple games. And after one game, Coach had me come to the office, and Coach Best was in there, and he says he wanted me to come play at East Carolina, offered me a scholarship right there on the spot. It was a tough choice because I know I'd semi-committed to UNCW, and me and Coach Scaff really never spoke after that. It was unfortunate. Really, admired Coach Scaff and Coach Guthrie, but as far as aspects of the scholarship, it couldn't be beaten. So I chose East Carolina, and I ended up a Pirate.
Yeah, no doubt. And I appreciate that thorough, detailing of your recruitment, because that was going to be my next question about the different programs you considered before choosing East Carolina and Coach O. The Pirates had so much success under Hal Baird, and prior to that, and Coach Baird and then Coach O had taken over. And so I know you were very excited to be going to a program like East Carolina that was so tradition rich in baseball. And just talk about arriving there onto the scene and, what it was like making that transition from the high school ranks to, pretty high level D1 baseball.
Yeah. Well, it was actually I went to orientation at the campus, and I'd seen campuses before, but East Carolina was different. But I met Coach Best that time, and we went over what was expected, what we're going to do, how things were going to go, because it was late, in the recruiting season. I mean, this thing really picked up into Legion ball. I mean, I wasn't settled until a good ways into the Legion season. So, but anyway, the difference is Legion ball almost is a good guide as to what you're going to see in college. Not quite the level, but you have a lot of talent in Legion ball because you pull from a lot of different cities. And our area, we had tremendous talent on our Legion team. Gaston County, North Gaston, East Lincoln, pulled players from all those, had some great talent there. So got to play with those guys. And a lot of those guys ended up playing professionally. And when you transition out of high school where you're the dominant force on your team, typically, you're used to, getting by. And you may be able to slide by in high school with a down game or something like that. But it's not the same in college. Every one of those guys you're pitching against, he was the best in their high school. He was the best in their conference. So the game has stepped up a lot. Your concentration level has to go up. Your art for me, pitching has to go up tremendously to be able to compete with a lineup of batters that were the best in their high school from 1 through 9. So it was a transition. I transitioned a little slow. Coach Best, talked to me in the fall, said, we need to pick some things up here. I know you're better than this. So we played fall ball, and back then we played a little bit more fall games than we do now. And, I finally started clicking, and, that led me into, getting ready for the upcoming, spring season that year in 1988.
Yeah. Well, you talk about Coach Billy Best, obviously, spent so many years now as a scout for the Atlanta Braves and does such a tremendous job there. And prior to that, and like you mentioned, having coached at several major college baseball programs, East Carolina, NC State, et cetera, really enjoyed our chat with him. I guess it was about this time last year, but that initial season, the Pirates went 33-14 and, yeah. And forgive me, I broke up a little just a few minutes ago when you were talking about that transition to the college ranks, but did you get much mound time in that freshman season in 1988?
Well, I didn't know if I was going to, but it started off fairly quickly for me. The very first game we played was against University of Virginia, and we looked at the lineup chart, and Coach O put the lineup chart. He had his lefty bullpen, he has righty bullpen, and on the righty bullpen, I was the last one. I was at the bottom of the list, you know, down four or five, and somehow Virginia got to our starter pretty early, and we maneuvered through several different pitchers, and finally I got the call to come in the game, and we were down, I think, maybe around 4 or 5 to 1 at the time. So at that point, my job was to go in there and hold them, see if our bats would come alive and get in the game. And that was my first experience. The first game we ever played in that season was my first game that I ever pitched in college. So right out the gate as a freshman. And I went in there and held Virginia down without a run for about 4 innings or so, roughly 4. Then I gave up a hit, and Coach O wanted to go with some experience, you know, had a guy on first, nobody out. So he brought in Jake Jacobs, who was 2 years older than me, great pitcher out of ECU, I'm sure you're well aware of. And Jake actually finished out, and we ended up coming back and winning the game. And Jake got the win in that game. But that was my first experience, and it was quite an experience. And that season I spot started, meaning I pitched not on the weekends unless it was in relief, but I'd spot start during the week during single games or doubleheaders during the week against non-conference opponents. And I ended up going 3-0 that year as a freshman. I did at the end of the year, due to various reasons, we had lost a couple pitchers. Some had left the team, injury or so. Did ended up, Gary Smith was our number one. Jake Jacobs was the number two. And I ended up being the number three towards the end of the year. And I pitched in Richmond, against Richmond Spiders. It was my first start in our conference championships. We lost the game. Great team out of Richmond that year. They had Brian Jordan, two sports star, Atlanta Falcons, baseball player, great baseball player as well. But that was a start. I started out 3-0 at East Carolina. My first game, I pitched was the first game of the season against University of Virginia. So it was quite an experience.
And that team in 1988 went 33-14, 8-6 in the Colonial Athletic Association. And despite that tremendous record, you know, came up a little shy of the NCAA tournament. And, you know, we'll talk about those 89, 90, and 91 seasons in detail. But just on the surface, you know, after missing the tournament as a freshman, you went to 3 NCAA tournaments from that point on.
Yeah. We got back that summer. I played some summer ball. I didn't go play the Valley or the Cape or anything like that year. I think that was kind of the year where Calvin Brown went up that year and hit the game-winning home run in the championship game in the Valley League. And I wanted to give a quick point of remembrance. We lost Calvin Brown this past year. Great man, great teammate. I was a roommate of his. It was unfortunate that we lost him this past year. So thoughts out to his family, and rest in peace, Calvin. You were a great man.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt there, but no doubt as far as Calvin Brown, I'm, you know, I'm very glad you brought that up. I certainly intended on doing so. We had the chance to catch up with Calvin about this time a year ago, and man, that was a tremendous conversation. And I'm very glad that we were able to have that chat before we received that tragic news.
Yeah. So coming back to campus for sophomore year, which was our 89 season, which was a really good team. We just weren't quite ready for primetime yet, but we really had a solid team. A lot of young guys mixed with some great veterans from those days. And we came back, we had a lot of excitement. Personally, I was 3-0. I was looking forward to maybe starting as a starting pitcher. We had JJ, Jonathan Jenkins, as we call him, Tim Langdon, Jake Jacobs, Brian Berkman. Good pitching staff coming back. Tremendous defense and offensive bats. And we started off great. I mean, we came out of the box really good. That personally was my career year at East Carolina. It was my sophomore year. I won 8 games that year, lost 1 towards the end of the year. Started off not giving up a run for 30 innings. So ended up with an ERA 1.89. So on a personal level, that was a great year. But we also had a great year as a team. And we did really well in the conference. We went to the conference tournament in UNC Wilmington. And that was probably my favorite tournament we had. We had some tough games. And specifically one that got us to the end was one that I pitched, and it was against James Madison. I had a no-hitter going for almost 6 innings and was doing really well. We ended up winning that game and taking us to the championship game, where we had some heroics come about. We had playing against, I believe it was Richmond at the time. Maybe it might have been UNCW. It's been a long time. Bases loaded, 1 out. Trying to get out of the inning. Jonathan Jenkins was on the mound. Coach O, I was warming up to come in. JJ stayed in the game. And John Gass made a saving play with the 1 out where he dove. He was on his knees, threw the guy out at home. We ended up getting out of the inning and going in. And textbook baseball, Steve Godden got on base. He was our right fielder at the time, fine player, one of our 5 tool players we had. He got on, stole second, was brought in with a hit. We went on and won the championship, celebrating all the way home on the van. You know, it was a great time with the fellas, knowing we were going to go to the NCAA tournament that year. So we got selected with our conference championship. We went to Gainesville, and I don't know what it was about Gainesville. It was extremely hot down there. The turf field at the time was tough. But we came out, started off fine against the Gators, but then they overtook us and beat us up pretty good. I think it was probably 11-5 or something. And then I got the call to pitch against Villanova in the next game. I actually came in a relief in that game. And I got wore out. I don't know what happened, but that year, we had a great squad, great hitting, great pitching, but we just quite weren't ready for the big time. And we were in the tournament with Florida Gators, Miami Hurricanes, who won that regional at the time, and Villanova at the time, who was a great powerhouse, some good players on that team, a couple of them who actually played in the major leagues. So it was a tough draw, but we learned some lessons, and that was my sophomore year. Had a great year that year, but we didn't perform like we could have in the NCAA regionals. So we had more to do.
In that season, you went 8-1 on the mound, and looking through the East Carolina record books prior to this conversation, that still ranks somewhere in the top 10 as far as obviously, only losing 1 game, you would think it would be, as far as ranking in the top 8 to 10 in terms of winning percentage.
Yeah, winning percentage, yes. I probably have a dubious honor in there too, as well. Most walks, probably for the innings. But as Coach O would tell me at one time, he said, and he actually, told a reporter this one time. He was effectively wild. So that was one thing that would stick with me, trying to get better. Work more of the plate instead of nibbling too much. But I was a little wild, but so the record books, the ERA was pretty good, 1.89. I know there's guys that have had lower ones now, and as years go by, records fall. But yeah, overall winning percentage, I was up there, and hits in the season and not giving up many hits. So that was a good year for me. It continued pretty good the next year as well. And then it kind of towards the end, I started, I don't know what happened. I may have faded a little bit. Arm strength was not as good, but that was the 90s season which I consider one of the best seasons in ECU baseball history, to be honest. One of the great teams, top to bottom. There was not a hole in the lineup. The pitching staff was tremendous from top to bottom. We had a great year, and I know you know a lot about that 90 season, so if you want to lead me into that with any thing you have, go ahead. Otherwise,
Absolutely. But before we really dive into that 90 season, I think you said that this transpired in the 90 season. You brought up that name John Gast just a few minutes ago. John, obviously, tremendous third baseman, went on to play professionally for several years in the minor leagues. But just talk about what transpired against the Maryland Terrapins that year at Harrington Field.
Yeah, so I don't know the backstory, but I could probably guess, since John was a Maryland guy, highly recruited baseball player, football player out of Maryland, ended up going to Auburn. And consequently, when Coach Best left ECU to go to Auburn, John came this way from Auburn to ECU. And it was a great addition to our team, tremendous player, a lot of power. He stole bases. He was sneaky on the base path. Great third baseman. But my guess is there was some bad blood between the Maryland players and John, and he got drilled in his back, excuse me, during one at bat, and he took offense to it, and kind of some pointing went on and stuff like that. So the next inning, as in a lot of baseball games, there seems to be retaliation in some form, and Mike Witten happened to be on the mound at the time, and so one of the Maryland players gets up there, and you could just feel it was coming. Excuse me. And he threw one that got behind the guy, and the guy came charging to the mound, but he didn't quite get too far. Mike Witten was charging the plate, and Tommy Eason had a hold of him. And then the next thing you know, the bullpens were on the field. Everybody was out. I ended up out on shortstop or second base area with Barry Nairn. Fisticuffs were thrown, and looked over, and we saw Tommy getting run by three of the Maryland players through the fence towards where the crowd sits. And excuse me, everything barreled over there, and there were some punches thrown over there. After about 10 minutes, everything got settled down, and I guess the game went on. It was a little different. It was spread out. It wasn't quite the circle you see when the pitcher hits somebody and everybody kind of gets in there and yip-yaps around. This one kind of got spread out a little bit, and there were some blows thrown, but fortunately nobody got injured, and that was over with. And we went on and beat Maryland and beat them every game we played them, and that was the – out of the whole thing, that was a sweet part. We ended up winning, and John, you know, made his point, and he took his base, and that was it for that. So, but I'm sure it had a lot to do with him being from Maryland.
And John, can you tell us at all, you know, just generally speaking, what did Coach O have to say about that incident?
Well, Coach O is pretty stoic, you know, it's all business on the field, but I'm pretty sure there was a sheepish grin around his face. I think he knew that one was coming and it was deserved. And I'm not going to say he sanctioned it, because it was, you know, this is a game between the fields, but I would assume he had a small little grin underneath the stoic look he always had on the field.
And that 1990 team, you know, 47-9, the best winning percentage in the country. Just that's crazy to only lose 9 games in a college baseball season. It's the best record from a win-loss percentage, no doubt about it. And I really remember a game that year when the Pirates had already beaten North Carolina at Harrington Field, and then we beat them 8-1 in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, so the game in Chapel Hill was a game where we had a few players that was didn't make the game, and I was one of them, but that was something Coach O had to deal with, something that happened. But we had a freshman step up, Jim Ambrosius. He went in there, and we start off with a bang. Steve Gotten hit a grand slam and really handled UNC that game real well. the real great game with UNC was at home at Harrington. That's really where the jungle really was memorable. And the jungle, for most people that are ECU fans, we all know what the jungle is. For anybody out there that doesn't know, the jungle was the left field area where the trees are all the way to center. And a lot of students came and watched the game from there, stood in the trees, stood around the fence, and it was really quite an atmosphere. And my roommate in college, he actually went to high school with me, and Coach Best allowed him to room with me in the dorms where the baseball players were, was a rugby player. And, you know, Tommy Easton's brother, Bob, was a rugby player. So the rugby team, with all their shenanigans, was a huge part of the jungle at that time. And it was quite a presence. And Tim Langdon was on the mound, and he was dealing, pitching as good as he had all year. And just held him down, and we had a huge crowd. And I'm pretty sure Mike, UNC coach, I can't think of the name right off the top of
my head. I got you. Mike Roberts.
Yeah, Coach Roberts was not happy at all. And I think he saw some things he didn't want to see from what we call – they had different nicknames, but the Jungle, the Treeper Creepers, whatever. But one of the things is, after a big weekend series at home, baseball pitchers, we'd run polls, and during those polls, we'd have to police up bottle caps from that were, you know, obviously slung from the jungle. But that atmosphere, that game, to me, that was what the jungle was all about. And I was in the bullpen most of my career. You know, if I wasn't pitching, I was in the bullpen, or I may chart a game in the dugout. But most of the time, I was out there with the jungle crowd, and, you know, they were excited. We were excited. They talked to us, asked us what's going on. You know, they wanted to be involved, and that was what was special about East Carolina and the jungle. So really enjoyed it. And that year, all the ACC teams we played, we took care of business and beat them during the regular season, and had no problem with them. I had a tremendous year, and it was a lot of fun that year. I thought we were going to go to the World Series. I honestly did. We had a no holes team. I mean, I can name the, you know, John Gass at third base, Barry Naren at shortstop, one of the great Naren ball players, Kevin Riggs at second base. We'd have Corey Short, and Tommy would play first or catch. Corey was, and Tommy gets a lot of accolades. You know, he came in highly recruited catcher, and he came in with a great attitude. It was a big attitude, but he knew he belonged. And I'll tell you one story about him real quick before I get back to that. But, you know, a lot of people started trying to do the shift on Tommy, where they'd bring everybody over to the left field and pitcher, you know, so they got shortstop, second base, third base over there, center fielder playing way over. And Tommy hit a blast over the trees. I mean, it probably ended up down there on Charles Street. And he came back to the dugout and said, "That's how you beat the shift," and looked at him. And I was like, "That's Tommy Easton for you in a nutshell." But we also had another great catcher at the time. His name was Corey Short, came from Lewisburg Junior College. Tremendous power in the bat, center field on. May have lost you, Bubba. Can you still hear me? Wait a minute, see if Bubba joins back.
I'm here.
Okay. Yeah. Corey was, you know, I threw to Corey a lot because I was number three pitcher. And Tommy did need a rest. So Corey would catch for him. So we also had one of the better backup catchers you can imagine on our team that year, too. So we were pretty tight in all the spots. We had, you know, John Adams in the outfield, great player, great hitter. And Tommy Yarbrough, another great player. We had fast, could hit, played outfield tremendously well. So that 90 team really didn't have a hole in it. Our pitching staff, from the starters all the way through the bullpen, were excellent. So it was a great year.
In that game, going back to the game at North Carolina, that is, it was not my first East Carolina baseball game, but it's the first one that I really remember. I guess I was 9 years old, and it stands out for obvious reasons, and the Pirates winning 8-1 My dad and I, we were aware of the result, and my dad may have known, but I didn't know exactly what the deal was with, everything that had transpired at Harrington Field. So when Coach Roberts would trot around to coach third base, all the East Carolina fans in attendance that afternoon would start chanting streak, streak, streak. So another Pirate fan in attendance told us the story, because obviously in those days we didn't have, couldn't just get on the internet and, check out the results and follow the game. So we would call Greenville and, rely on the newspaper to get results. But yeah, that was a tremendous afternoon at Bochimer Stadium. And I remember that grand slam there in the first inning when the Pirates went up, I guess it was 6-0, and Steve Godden. And then I remember a couple of North Carolina fans in front of us said, this could get ugly.
Yeah. I had to listen to the radio, but yes, like you said, no social media, nobody on the phone could tell you anything. You had to listen to it on the radio or catch it, when you got back. So, but yeah, went up quick and didn't look back. And we had a Jim Ambrosius stepped up in the pitching role, big lefty we had, younger. And he did his job and came back with a huge victory. And that was just, part of the season, people stepping up for others. We had a good mesh of players. We won the conference tournament that year. We were definitely knew we were going to the NCAA tournament. We also wanted to win our conference championship. And part of that was during conference tournaments, your arms and your bullpen get real tired. You use a lot of pitching. So we ended up pitching a guy named Corey Reddick, who didn't pitch all season, but he had pitching in his history, in his baseball career. And he had to step up and pitch a game and, held the team down and we won. So, just players stepping up that you never would expect it. So we ended up winning the tournament as well. We probably, we were going to get an at-large bid because we were in the top 12 of the country at the time. So we were going to get an at-large bid regardless, but winning your conference championship is something special. And had a good time doing it that year. I also pitched in that tournament, beat James Madison that year. So I had their number, you could say, in both of the conference tournaments in Wilmington and in Greenville. And then we got selected to go play in Miami. And that was a different kind of tournament. It rained forever. I'm sure you've heard of.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. And my dad actually, he was around my current age at the time. And, he did everything he could to get those games broadcast on 1380 WTOB in Winston-Salem because Jeff Charles was, of course, down there for the call. And we were able to get that in Winston-Salem on 1380, the old AM station there. And that was a lot of fun, being able to listen to those games. And you referenced that name Corey Short earlier. I remember him having a big hit. So excellent memories of that 1990 season, even though it didn't go the way we would have liked down in Coral Gables. And for those younger Pirate fans who may not realize, the NCAA format changed in the late 90s. I think it was 1998 to be exact. So back then in 1990, all the way up through 1997 or 98, you had 48 teams in the NCAA tournament as opposed to 64, and you had 6-team regionals instead of the current 4-team regional format. I mean, it was a lot more challenging to win that 6-team regional.
Yeah, and I like the format as it is now, but it was challenging then. We went down to Miami, did what we were supposed to do the first game. Jonathan Jenkins, and Tim Langdon were 1 and 2. I was 3. They were having All-American seasons. Jonathan did his part. We called him JJ, and we played South Florida, and we won that game. And we were set and playing Citadel. Tim Langdon was on the mound, heavily favored to beat Citadel. They were last seed in our regional. And they came out on top. But in between those two games, there was a lot of rain, and we didn't play, and we kind of got off rhythm, I would assume. We were clicking, and then we go to the field, and we go back to the hotel, go to the field, go to the hotel. It was kind of had us out of sorts. So the way we looked at it, we were going to beat the Citadel, and then the next game we were going to play whoever it was, Miami or NC State. Well, anyway, we ended up losing to the Citadel in the second game, and then we ended up playing NC State the next game. If everything had panned out the way that I can see it as it, what I feel should have, we would have, you know, beat Citadel, and we would have played either Miami or NC State on ESPN. Tim Brando was actually going to be the one calling the game at the time. But the whole schedule got screwed up by the tremendous amount of rain down there in Coral Gables. The field would shed water pretty quick, but it was still too much rain and thunderstorm. So we kind of got out of sorts. I started the game against NC State over the weekend, and I got hit by a ball up the middle on my right side where my hip bone is, and it really got me good, and ended up not being able to progress that day, proceed in the game. So I had to be taken out, and we ended up losing that game and going home. But that was a year we all felt that we should have went to the World Series, and lo and behold, Citadel actually ended up representing that regional in the World Series, coming out as a sixth seed. So you never know.
Yeah, we appreciate everyone tuning in right now on YouTube, Facebook, as well as Twitter. And if you're tuned in live, you know, send us a comment, send us a question for John. We have several who have already done so. You mentioned that name, Tim Langdon, a tremendous pitcher for the Pirates, and we've had him on the show before. He says, big guy.
Yeah, that's a Coach O-ism, as we call it. Coach O would always say, big guy, you got the mound, or, you know, you're on the bump or whatever. But, yeah, Tim and I, you know, spent a few years together in the pitching ranks there, and we had a lot of funny times. Him and Brian Berkman were, you know, they were fun to come back to the bullpen. They'd let you know if you had a great game or a bad one, one way or the other. I remember one time I gave up 3 home runs to a team. I think it might have been my freshman year, and I came to the bullpen, and they were kicking dirt as I was coming up, and I said, what are you guys doing? They're like, we're putting the fire out. So they were that kind of crowd. Fun to be around, good guys, but we spent a lot of time together. As I said, we were always in the bullpen unless we were charting a game. And so back then, you know, scouting was a lot different. Today we have all this technology and analytics and everything, big data that shows you, you know, where the hitter's holes are and stuff like that. Back then we relied on ourselves and, you know, being able to chart the game, see where, you know, what was going on. And when you pitched, you know, you had to rely on that. Or if, you know, somebody knew a player and could tell you. But that was how we did it back then.
Yeah, it's funny that you reference you reference some of the things that you just did. Charles chimed in on Facebook just a minute ago saying that he had just tuned in, but this had not been addressed. Charles, I know, John, you were a senior in 1991, as you see there on the screen, and Pat Watkins, and that was his first year in the program, but so he had a question saying, did you play with Pat Watkins? So I guess his freshman year was your senior year.
Yeah, I did play with Pat Watkins. He came in, him and Johnny Beck, you know, were the big names that came in. Pat was a tremendous player. I mean, he had every tool in the bag. You could just tell that he was going to go somewhere. He was speed, arm, bat, everything, defense. Yeah, he was the whole package. And I got to enjoy his freshman year. Obviously, he went on and did tremendous things. He got drafted really high, professional ball, one of the all-time greats at ECU. I got to see him his freshman year. I was a senior, so had one year with him, and it was a joy to watch him. You could tell good things were going to come out of Pat. I really enjoyed that time.
We also had Mark Callaway chiming in earlier on saying hello, and then also he said, why is the Harrington name missing from our baseball stadium. Obviously, Harrington Field was the home of the Pirates up through the 2004 season. And then when Clark LeClair Stadium opened early March of 2005, that Harrington name was no longer part of things. And I cannot provide you with an answer for that, Mark. And, that's something that I'll dive into. But I agree with you just in general terms. A lot of times you see, especially in this day of corporate sponsorship, you see like Grove Stadium for Wake Forest, for instance, in football, and you see it became BB&T Field and so on and so forth. So many examples of that, but that is an excellent question. I was curious before. You obviously have Lewis Field at Clark LeClair Stadium. I thought it may be Harrington Field at Clark LeClair Stadium, but that is not the case. But a moment ago, I lost my train of thought. Well, I know what it was when you referenced Coach O saying big guy. That's funny because I'm sure I may have heard him say it at some point, but when I hear that expression big guy, as well as most East Carolina fans, they'll think of Matt Maloney, who was coming onto the scene there with the Pirate Club right as you were finishing your time in the baseball program.
Yeah, Coach O had a few things. He would typically reserve the big guy for Tim Langdon going on the field. But he had a few different little, as we call it, Coach O-isms. I mean, it's hard to recollect all of them, but Coach had a unique way of stating things. And he was quite different from a coaching perspective. Like I said, he was all business inside those lines, and he would every once in a while come up with something and, make you laugh. And, during stretching and stuff, he walked around to every player and talked to him briefly during, before practice even got started. But that was Coach O's style. So a lot of us guys that played back then still get around, and we still do the Coach O-isms together. It's fun to get together with those guys and say big guy and stuff like that. So that was just part of his nature and the way he was.
And you referenced some of those Coach O-isms. It may not be the same ones, but he's in pretty much anybody. If you listen to him speak enough, you'll be able to pick out phrases they use frequently. But Coach O does an excellent job, obviously, on the broadcast as the color analyst, and he'll definitely have some of those things that he says that me and the other guys on this podcast, as well as just other Pirate fans, will get a laugh out of. But he does an excellent job. I actually just saw him yesterday when I was down at the basketball game against Cincinnati. Ran into Coach O as soon as I walked into the arena.
Oh, yeah. Yep. That was a heartbreak loss last night. They've been playing pretty good. Coach O on the field back when, people dipped and stuff like that. One of his other ones was dip me big guy, which meant he was out or he hadn't got a refresh or whatever. So whoever had a can of this stuff, Copenhagen, he asked for a dip me big guy. So it was, that was another one of his.
No doubt. That 91 season, we haven't referenced it, I don't believe, but the 91, coming off that 47-9 campaign, 30-24-1, but really came on toward the end of the year, went out there to Wichita, tremendous atmosphere at X Stadium. And obviously the Shockers are part of the American now. So the Pirates have played out at X Stadium a few times, several times, I should say, in recent years. But Shockers were number one, absolutely had it rolling under Gene Stevenson. And that game, the Pirates jumped up 5-0 before falling 10-5.
Yeah. So, as you mentioned, that season we had lost a lot of talent. We lost guys to senior. And we lost guys to the draft. So we relied a lot upon the freshmen, Pat Watkins and Johnny Beck and those guys. At this point, my velocity was way down. I wasn't throwing like I had been in my sophomore and junior years. I still started that year. But Johnny Beck was really the workhorse as a freshman. And we didn't start off well. We did finish strong. Winning the conference tournament, that was the only way to get in. And our selection was we had to go up against the number one team in the country, Wichita State Shockers, a great baseball program. Like you mentioned, Gene Stevenson legacy. They had all kinds of top talent on their team. So we went out there in our first night and we took them to task, but we just couldn't hold them off. We had a bases loaded situation. It possibly could have got out of it, but didn't happen. And then they just kind of took off from there, as a great team typically does. And so we lost that game. Johnny Beck pitched outstanding in the face of extreme adversity, him being a freshman and Wichita being number one team in the country. The next game we played, it was against Ryder, and we ended up winning that game. So we were the next was against Ohio State. I think they were number 10 in the country that year. And this was the last collegiate game that I pitched. I didn't start, but I came in and pitched four or five innings, really strong. I knew it was going to be my last collegiate game, probably my last baseball game at that level of competition or higher. And I just mustered it up and pitched probably the best. At that time, Winford Johnson was the pitching coach. And after the game, he told me, he's like, that's the best I've seen you pitch since I've been around. And I did. I did really well. We ended up losing that game maybe 3-2. Unfortunate ending, but we couldn't quite move past Ohio State. Would have liked to get another shot at Wichita State, see what we could have done. But we did make a little splash out there, and it was fun. But it was my last hurrah as a collegiate player. Was out in Wichita.
Yeah, I guess I would have been 10 at the time. And the reason I bring that up is because we've had Winford Johnson on the show, and I'm well aware of Winford Johnson's Pirate career, but I did not realize that he was the pitching coach on that team.
Yeah, him and Kevin Anderson were splitting duties at that time, I would say. But Winford was helping out with the pitching coach. I don't know if he was officially named that, but he was helping out with the pitching situation at the time. And, you know, he's a straight legend out of East Carolina. I mean, Winford did it all when he played there. So it was fun to hear him and be a part of him for at least 1 year for me. Some of the older guys got to play with him. My freshman year, some of the older guys on the team played with him. But he was quite a talent when he played, and he was a character off the field as well. Good guy.
Yeah, John, moving on, just talking about the East Carolina baseball program as a whole, you know, I referenced it in the opening, and so tradition rich. And in the years since you played, we Pirates have been to 6 Super Regionals, you know, won countless conference championships, so much success. Just talk about as a, you know, Pirate baseball letter winner and a part of so many NCAA tournament teams yourself, you know, what ECU baseball means to you.
It's important. It's really baseball is what kind of drove me towards East Carolina, but that's where I got my degree. That's where I met some of my lifelong friends. That's where I learned how to grow up as independently away from my family. A lot of life lessons, but as far as the baseball program, I get to follow it every year, get to see special events, get to see some of these great teams. And I know the Pirates have that, the monkey on the shoulder about getting to the World Series. I think it's coming. Coach Godwin has done a tremendous job. I mean, I would say some of the greatest talent being assembled. You saw last year's team. I mean, you got 2 first-round picks, strong right arm there. Unfortunately, went up against Vanderbilt, you know, with Leiter and Rocker. I mean, that's a tough 1-2 to get by. So they played well. I would say that watching the series, I was not very impressed with the way the umpire handled the strike zone. I thought it was horrible. But
Most definitely.
Yeah. So that was tough. I mean, you cannot be given pitchers like Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker extra pitches. I mean, they already have an arsenal. So anyway, we showed that we had pitching that could stand up to those two. The team was tremendous. The bats were great. And thought this was our year. Didn't work out. I've seen a few other teams that I thought were going to make it. I know that against what was it, Ole Miss, we were probably a hit away twice from going to the World Series there.
Yep, in 2016 down there in Lubbock against Texas Tech.
Yeah, I was at Texas Tech, okay. And then the LSU series that 1 year. There's just been so many, and I know that, you know, ours was a long time ago, but it's just some that were so close you could just taste and you felt like you belonged in the World Series, but you just couldn't get over the hump. So I expect it to happen. Like I said, Coach Godwin has done a great job. The talent level has exploded, in my opinion. Top-notch guys all across the board. So I'm looking forward to another great season, and hopefully some of those big holes that moved on to the professional ranks can be filled quickly, and we get back into the Super Regional and move on to the World Series.
No doubt. You referenced LSU. That was a tremendous regional down there in Baton Rouge, where the Pirates were the number one seed, but not in a position to host because of not having Clark LeClair, and we didn't put in a bid for whatever reason to host at Fleming Stadium or a Granger Stadium. But that we really had LSU on the ropes, and we were without Travis Thompson.
Yeah, that was a disappointing. Disappointing when I thought it was that. And if I recall, LSU may have won the whole thing that year, to be honest. I can't say that for certain, but it feels like they ended up winning the World Series that year.
Yeah, LSU, so much success throughout the 90s under Skip Bertman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you saw that the teams were scrambling for coaches this year. And so you saw a little movement there in some of those SEC programs, and we're fortunate enough to still have Coach Godwin. I mean, he's a tremendous talent, well sought after coach. So glad he's back, and look forward to seeing what he can put out in the field this year.
Now, in addition to baseball, you know, tell Pirate Nation what you're up to. I know you're currently living in the greater Raleigh area, Morrisville, and you've been there for a little over two decades. And so, you know, tell Pirate fans about life after your days concluded on the diamond for ECU.
Yeah. So after I left East Carolina, I actually went into the United States Coast Guard for 4 years, got out, kind of, you know, trying to get my way after baseball, because growing up, baseball was my life. College, you know, I got my degree, but baseball was a huge part of the college routine for me. So having to adjust to outside of the college life and baseball, I graduated, went into the Coast Guard, got out after 4 years. I was in the Virginia area when I started looking for work down in the RTP area. My best friend, Mike Williams, who had been in the Air Force, had said he had got out. He says there's a lot of jobs in this area that I think you'd be a good fit. So he kind of guided me in to this area, and I've been here working in the data network, voice and data network technical side of the house for telecommunications. I spent time with MCI, spent most of my career with AT&T, and now spent time with Wells Fargo Bank. And so been pretty much here in this area 22 years doing technology work for a few different organizations, but mainly AT&T for 18 years. So that's what I've done.
Awesome. So glad you're doing well. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I appreciate you being so generous with your time, and you know, look forward to meeting you in person. Hopefully that will happen this spring. You know, be it at a Pirate Road game or somewhere within the state, or you know, maybe down at Clark LeClair.
Sure. Yep. I've been down there for some baseball games, so I'm sure I'll see you there. I hadn't been to a football game in a while, but I'm trying to get – my daughters have been down there watching games and stuff. So looking forward to meeting you, and looking forward to more shows. Looking forward to seeing some of the guys you have lined up. And thanks for setting all this up. And it's a good topic. And the jungle tales, there's a lot of tales. And it probably couldn't bring a few of them to the table, but – It's quite a unique experience for Greenville to have the jungle and Yeah, it was a great time there. So thanks for having me on.
No doubt. There definitely are plenty of tremendous stories. And Bubba Grant, William chimes in saying Winfred Johnson equals GOAT. Great stories, John White. Thank you.
Yeah, Winfred was the GOAT for sure when I got there. He had done it all. Everybody knew him. He legendary home runs, pitching, everything. He did it all.
I know earlier on we talked about John Gast, but I know we've had John on. I really look forward to having JJ that you referenced, Jonathan Jenkins, so many tremendous pitchers during those years and just throughout East Carolina's baseball history in general. But on the topic of John Gast, I always thought I enjoyed the Major League movies, Major League, and then also Major League 2. I didn't realize it at the time when I watched Major League 2, but going back and after the fact, hearing that John Gast was in it.
Yeah, he had some spot duty in there, and you can catch him in a few scenes on the bench, on the first base area. But yeah, John's had a few times in some film and some shows. I know he's an air marshal now, and he's had a great career after his baseball career was over, but he was a tremendous player. He had a funny side to him. He always had a calming way when he approached the mound, settling you down. He'd say a few unique things to kind of get you back on track. So he was a great teammate, good guy, big old bear type guy. And we was fortunate to have him at East Carolina.
And you referenced the other 23 Jungle Tales. This is just volume 2 of 23, and the previous was Matt Bridges and Cam Colmore, two Pirates who just finished their six-year careers. Very unusual, but I'm glad to have them in the purple and gold for those six seasons. So definitely go back and check that out. For those of you who may have missed it, it, as well as all these, can be found on our YouTube channel. We have these and so much more content. So subscribe, and that way, if you ring the notification bell, you'll be alerted when any new content's posted. But as I said, John, appreciate the conversation, some excellent stories. Definitely look forward to meeting you, and take care.
Thanks, Bubba. I appreciate you bringing me on, and go Pirates.